Welcome to the Script and Style Show, the web show where we talk about web development with the people that make it happen. Today's episode is brought to you by TrackJS JavaScript Error Monitoring. Know when errors hit your website with the context to find and fix bugs fast with TrackJS. Start your free trial today at TrackJS.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Script and Style Show, the online web show where we talk about web development and the people and personalities that make it happen. I'm Todd Gardner from TrackJS and my co-host, David Walsh, creator of the popular blog DavidWalsh.name. How's it going, David?
It's going good, man. Work at Mozilla has been really good. I've been, again, as people know, working and talking about the debugger constantly. And so I thought to myself, why don't I force my teammate to come on the show and vouch that good things are happening? So this week I invited Jason.
Oh no, it was a trap.
No! He's going to blame you for everything that has gone wrong.
Sure.
That's why I'm on the show.
Listen, it's the same thing at home, so it's nothing new.
It's been a month. I have to break it to you.
No, I thought it would be really fun to talk about JavaScript debugging. Last week we took some Q&A and we had some really good questions about JavaScript and what people should know. And people tend to focus on language features, but how to use your tools is a really good, skill. So I brought Jason on to talk about the debugger and debugging in general. I thought that'd be fun.
Yeah, that sounds great. So Jason, you and I have never actually met before. So why don't you kind of introduce yourself and tell us all a little bit about who you are and what you do and what you work on.
Sure. So I joined Mozilla about 2 years ago, which was around the time that, well, David will know this, Firefox OS was winding down and the focus on the desktop was winding up. And I knew I wanted to work at the time on a debugger. I just love tools in general. And Mozilla was the perfect culture. So I was thrilled.
Wait a second. So out of all of the things you could have worked on, you wanted to work on when things break.
I actually don't like the term debugger. I like development environment, but that's on the roadmap.
Good answer.
Awesome. And then, so adding a little bit more, Jason, as I came on the team, was one of two people maintaining the debugger along with Yulia. And like his most important qualification or skill is that he's able to handle me for 8 hours a day. Like even my wife is like, that poor guy, we need to get him something. But yeah, we work on the debugger each day. Jason, you mentioned why you're at Mozilla, but how did you get to Mozilla? What's sort of like your origin story of becoming a developer and getting to where you are today?
Man, so much luck. So when I was in college, I fell into a couple internships early on and just realized I love this stuff. But I had no idea at that point whether I wanted to work at a big company or a small company or what that fit would be. So I did, I think, 5 internships in college. Like small companies, big companies like Facebook, front end, back end, data. And through that time, I realized I love building stuff, but I hate that feeling of using a framework and it just failing. You know, it's like Harry Potter, like waving the wand and like it's broken. Like when it works, it's great, but it really hurt when it didn't. So out of college, I did this program called Recurse Center. At the time, it was called Hacker School, but they realized that naming something Hacker School was very bad for the federal government or perhaps like the outside world. Some people couldn't come in. You know, they'd go to immigration and customs would be like, what are you doing here? And Hacker School is not a good name for that. But Recurse Center is this magical place where you do open source for 3 months. And I got there thinking, man, I'm going to work on like routers and like technically difficult framework things. And I found myself in a really welcoming community on the Ruby REPL Pry, hacking on Pry's autocomplete and just amazing language tools, and realized that A, open source about people and working with cool people doing cool stuff, and B, that like as a Ruby developer, I could work on the Ruby REPL. And so a couple of years later, when I was at Etsy working on the Backbone framework and Marionette, I started working on a Marionette DevTools because I just love DevTools, and noticed that the browser, in this case Chrome and Firefox, their DevTools were HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And I didn't have to, I thought it was like C++ and like a black box, and there's no way I could do that. But as soon as I realized as a web developer I could work on these things, I was kind of hooked.
Awesome. And so was Mozilla your first job, or did you have like a small, like, did you work at a small web shop at some point before you got here?
Yeah. So I was at Etsy for 3 years. No, maybe 4 or 5.
Oh, okay, and cool.
Did you just call Etsy a small web shop?
I'll push back on that. Etsy was a fantastic place to be. And I don't think anyone would call it a small web shop.
Well, they went public, so they can't be small anymore.
They went down a bit. They went a little smaller and then went a little bigger.
Okay, so was Debugger your first Mozilla project?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about Debugger. Can you give a really sort of brief overview of what this new debugger we're working on is today?
Sure. So when I joined, I really interviewed for the job. I was like, so I know there are other tools and dev tools. There's the console, which is pretty cool. There's the inspector, which is useful, but I want to work on the debugger. And specifically, I want to see if we can make the debugger really hackable. At the time, all of Mozilla was basically written in this technology called Zool, which I know you know a lot about. It stands for XML UI Library, and it looked a lot like what you'd build if you wanted Angular in, I don't know, and when was Zool invented?
Long time ago, right?
Yeah.
It's Zool sounds like something Microsoft would have invented.
Oh, no. It's totally like a Mozilla, you know.
I just mean like an XML-defined mechanism of like organizing a UI that, to me, that it's bringing up all kinds of horrors of like XAML and WPF from a .NET background.
But the branding was so Mozilla. And of course, like if you're building a browser, why not invent a million components with different tags and define them with like C++ and injected JavaScript? The only gotcha is we have no concept of how to work on a massive component library across add-ons, run these components outside of the browser pane. And we're now tied to components no one wants to touch and can only run if you build Firefox. Ergo, not hackable.
Yeah, and if you're building Firefox the first time, it's going to take you 40 minutes to get that thing built, right? So the development environment for working on these Zool add-ons has always been not in any way enjoyable.
Yeah. So the timing was really good because the reason why the team had this infrastructure was it worked really well for many, many years. And a lot of people were working on Firefox OS, and this gave us some cross-browser compatibility. And with Firefox OS winding down, we had the mandate to focus on the desktop. And we knew that we wanted to go off of Zool. So we had this huge need to leave Zool, and then a big question of like what we wanted to do. And James Long was on the team pushing for React. He'd been pushing for React for years. He was part of the React ecosystem, written fabulous blog posts on the power of the React component model. And he added a couple places React components that people liked. So we just decided, you know what, let's go to GitHub. Let's do an experiment of what a brand new debugger would look like, a whole new UI, bring from the top down or bottom up in React. And within 3 months, we had a UI that looked pretty good. It kind of had like a Craigslist feel. It was very minimal, but like it worked. And we showed it to the team, and they said, yeah, ship it. And then it took another year and a half to ship, but it's been a blast.
So were you working full-time in that 3 months on this UI, or is it something that you were doing on the side?
No, I was really lucky. I had one or two bugs in the old debugger, which took me a really long time. And then a month later, they're like, you know, maybe you should work with James on this new one. So we started with like an HTML tag, a div. The editor wasn't CodeMirror. It was a pre-tag.
Okay.
And we just went from there.
One of my favorite quotes, Todd, at Mozilla is that everything cool that's come out of Mozilla started with somebody lying to their manager about what they were doing. And I needed to figure out if this was one of those things.
That's pretty much most development projects. I don't think that's limited to Mozilla. But all right, let me ask you this. So I'm a little bit naive on the internal workings of Mozilla. So can you tell me what exactly, like, what is the scope of debugger HTML? Like, as a user, like the user being a developer who's working on top of Firefox, where is, like, what are the boundaries of debugger.html? When am I using that?
Okay. So when you go to the debugger tab, everything you see is debugger HTML.
The whole tab,
the whole page. Okay. Yeah. And the way we think about it is, like most web apps, there's a UI and then there's a server. There's a client and a server. The server is actually also written in JavaScript, but privileged JavaScript. And that is not part of debugger HTML. That's still in Firefox.
So what is running my code? Let's say I have a really simple bit of JavaScript that's running and I want to attach the debugger to it. Can you, like, how does that work? I have a really simple script. All it does is say, alert, hi mom. And that's all it does. Like, if I open up the debugger HTML on it, what is actually running my code?
That's a great question. So first of all, when we went to GitHub, we also said, you know what, we want to run debugger HTML as a tab, like a web page. We're building it with Webpacks, Webpack development server. It's going to run on localhost 8000. It's not going to be part of the Firefox build system. And the brilliance of this is that we can refresh and see changes, and it's totally separated from Firefox. So the way this works is that Firefox has an API that has commands like add breakpoint or events like new source, paused. And so the debugger HTML project can talk over this API and have no knowledge of the internals of the browser. Now, the server, on the other hand, is really, really interesting. And it has internals and hooks into the browser. And we can talk about that. But for the simple purpose of like work on debugger HTML, it can run anywhere and connect remotely, which means it can also connect to Chrome and connect to Node, or even debug like your phone, which is a huge part of the vision. Like, we want to build a universal JavaScript debugger.
Debugging mobile devices continues to be a giant pain, having done that a few times.
For sure.
So we've only been doing that for like 10 years though, Todd. we've only not fixed this for 10 years.
Yeah, like occasionally I'll mention how bat broken it is, and somebody will tell me, "Oh, but it's going to be fixed in this next beta version of whatever." And I'm like, "It's still not." Like,
no.
There's actually a huge subset of our customers who just use TrackJS to debug mobile clients. Like, they'll install TrackJS to monitor their development environment and put it on a phone or whatever, and then just console log everything that's going on and just record a session and debug it that way, because it's easier than all of like the cabling and custom permissions and packages and stuff that you need to get to get other people's, you know, mobile debugging working correctly.
Yeah.
So let me make a little confession. I'm currently a Chrome user. So, and Chrome's debugger is pretty good. I do enjoy it. How is what you are trying to do with the Firefox debugger different than what Chrome is doing? Like, are you both running after the same goal, or are you trying to do something different than what they're doing?
Yeah. So I'll make a confession as well. I love Chrome's debugger. I think it's really, really good. And that is fine. Like, we can say that it's fast, it's stable, breakpoints most of the time hit except for source maps. Stepping works really well except sometimes with source maps. And it's a really good product, and I admire it. The way we want to differentiate is twofold. One, we want to take advantage of the fact that we work with a community and we enjoy partnering with all the frameworks, all the libraries. So where Chrome will give you a JavaScript debugger that, you know, has a call stack and variables and whatnot, we hope to give you a React debugger if you use React, or an Angular debugger or a Vue debugger with framework extensions built right into the product. So when you hover on, I don't know, this, and you're looking at a component, you'll get the props and state immediately. You're not going to have to like hunt through all the other variables. Or if you look at the call stack, you'll see you're in a render method, and that method's part of a component, which is really like a child of another component. You can see the whole component tree. So we want to work with the community as much as possible. The other way we're different is we've kind of, I guess by virtue of building it again in 2016, which is not a fun thing to do. I do not recommend doing it to a friend. Like, don't build a debugger from scratch. But because we did, we saw that the world was kind of like a Babel world. Everyone was using a build step. And as a result, we put Babel right into the center, which means if you're using Babel or Webpack or Flow or TypeScript or whatever, and Babel can understand it, we can understand it, which means we have much better preview support, much better breakpoints, and the list goes on and on and on, which is really exciting because with the direction frameworks are going in, they're going to look like compilers in a couple of years. Like, Svelte totally got it right. And the fact that we can pause in an original file and show you the variables in scope, or if you're using Webpack, show you the module you're in, even though it's not a module, it's like an iffy, it just works, is really huge.
So you said that like you don't wish rebuilding software on anybody, and in my mind immediately went to the old Joel on Software blog post of things you should never do.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
So why was it the right decision in your case to rebuild the debugger?
So I'm not sure that it was. Like, we probably had an incremental path forward, and that probably would have been, I don't know, better for my health, to say the least. But we had a couple advantages. I think starting from scratch meant from day one, the debugger was hackable. Like, we were there, like, building it out really quickly and having a lot of fun. And sometimes if you're taking one piece out and putting another piece in, and you're not quite happy with your development environment, it's really hard to change the development environment until you're done. So, like, from day one, we were having fun, and that's cool. And then I think the other reason why it was really important for us to do it was, and this is just an admission of where we're at, James Long, who's a really good engineer, set out to take our source list, which, you know, in 2016 could have thousands of files because of all the node modules, and make it a tree. And he couldn't. Like, he couldn't build that component in the existing world because it was too slow to debug it, develop it, and then move things around. So we just at some point declared bankruptcy, and it kind of sucked to do that. But at some point you just say, you know what, it's better to start from scratch and be proud of each piece and build it up.
Yeah. In the blog post that we've referenced, I'll put it in the show notes. One of the examples they talk about is like a bug that you discover, like you're rebuilding the features and you think, oh, this is a bug. But it turns out it was actually an important piece of business logic or important piece of logic that like just nobody fully understood. And now that bug is just expected behavior.
Yeah.
Do you have any good examples of when that's happened, rebuilding the debugger?
Where people want the thing even though it's broken? Is that kind of it?
Yeah, like the broken behavior is what it needs to do. Like, you come back in and you're ready to rebuild it, and you're going to refactor it, and it's going to be better and faster and cheaper and stronger and all those great things. And slowly you come to discover that the way it was, that some weird way that some component was built is the way it has to be, due to, you know, customer expectations or whatever.
Oh, man. I'm going to try to keep this short.
story time.
So the debugger in many ways is really simple because we receive events from the server. The sources and we show them in the list. And if we want to show you a single source, we fetch the content, we show it in the editor. And when we pause, we get the pause data and we can visualize it in the debugger. You can think of it as like the perfect app for React because it's really functional. We get the data we need and we show it. A lot of problems happen with timing. And if you have watch expressions and you can pause in a watch expression, and there are three other watch expressions, what do you do in those situations? If you have a conditional breakpoint and the conditional breakpoint throws an exception, does that cause issues? And what's the correct behavior in those cases? In some places with watch expressions, we choose not to even show the error because it's like a reference error and a type error, and like it's not useful. It's like, what do we hide? What do we show? Getters, oh man, those things are weird. Do we evaluate those? Do we not evaluate those? Preview has been really interesting. Like Chrome's approach for like when you pause and hover on a variable is to ask CodeMirror for like, what's the token you're looking at? Oh, okay. Like you're looking at foo. Okay, I'll evaluate foo in the background and I show a pop-up. And if foo is a member of this, so it's like this.foo, like, all right, I'll go one token over to the left and like get this and evaluate this.foo. From the beginning, Firefox decided to use a parser and the AST. So like the parser reads the file and creates a tree of the code. And then we just like look in the tree and like, oh yeah, you're looking at like the foo literal or the foo property. And foo's parent is an expression. So we'll get like this.foo. That works in the happy case, and like we can redo what Chrome does, but we try to go so much further. Because like maybe you want a parameter in a function call. Or maybe you want like assignments, like you're hovering on like const x equals 3 and that's different, or like destructuring in the const, like const curly x equals curly equals 3. So I have to go in there. And we had no idea what we were signing up for. And the like, infinity of cases that we might want to preview. But yeah, I could see looking at that code from the outside and we're like, yeah, this is terribly written code. What were they even thinking? But having lived it and seeing the complexity grow and like all the cases handled, I can kind of begin to appreciate like, yeah, this is all there for a reason. And in fact, you want to handle those cases. Like you want to show the user everything. Like if it's X bracket 0 or like movies bracket 0, you want to show them the first movie when they hover on 0. That's really interesting. And you just can't do that with any other system.
I'd like to vouch for the fact that a lot of things depend on each other in this in this project. You know, like you shift into a new project or a new job or something. You're like, you want to come in and impress and really, you know, kick ass. And you're like, you take on this task that looks simple and it like breaks 8 different things. And you go, this is not what I thought it was. I've run into that quite a few times, as Jason will attest to. So you can look at things and say, well, this isn't all that well done, but you do see the edge cases and why things, you know, sort of depend on each other. And you need to keep that stuff in mind when you're working on the debugger right now.
What are some cases for you where you looked at something like, this is terrible, and then you like came to appreciate by reading the tests or something or looking at those things and you're like, yeah. Oh, no, this has some meaning.
You mentioned the sources tree earlier.
Yeah.
The sources tree is something where I have either seen issues or filed issues that I want to fix that I'm like, oh, this should be pretty easy. And it's most definitely not easy. I mean, the sources tree doesn't sort of work like a normal React component, right? And there's a lot of shuffling going on. And it's difficult. It's hard to work around stuff like that. But again, it's, you know, just sort of part of the onboarding process. And as I learn more or as contributors learn more, it's something that they'll be able to dive into and improve.
Yeah.
Speaking of, like, one of the things I was most impressed about when it came to Debugger HTML was the community that you guys have built around it. I, as a Mozilla employee, was happy to contribute. Right. But that's only because I sort of learned about it through going to the Mozilla All Hands and talking to people. But when I joined the team, I couldn't believe how big your greater team was, you know, just there was you two maintainers, but you had, you've created a steady group of contributors that are really making a difference. Like, how did you do that? Why did you do that? You know, what led you to do that?
So the first thing is we got incredibly lucky. There are so many people who want to contribute to Firefox and are just looking for how they can get started. And that's a testament to Firefox's history, Netscape open sourcing the code, Mozilla maintaining that brand, maintaining the interest in open source, and the fact that so much of Mozilla is so hard to contribute to. Like, oh yeah, no, I'm not going to work on like a video codec. No, I'm not going to work on like WebRTC. I might try, but like, no, it's really difficult. So when we started working on a project in GitHub that was React, it checked off a lot of boxes for people. And people began knocking on our door, opening PRs within the first month or two. And some of those people are here now. So Wellington, who's fantastic at mentoring and just a great team member, he started, I want to say in August, and the project started in April. So he was there pretty early. Bomsley, who's fantastic and just does some of the most technical pieces and a fantastic mentor and kind guy. He started in November and he got syntax highlighting working with CodeMirror for searches. So, you know, like when you do a command F and like shows you like this is your match, he drew that box. And I don't understand that code to this day. It was just like blind faith. Like, this guy seems smart. And he had worked on the debugger 5 years ago, 4 years ago, doing crazy pretty printing stuff, but kind of fell off the bandwagon because, you know, life gets in the way and things have been difficult. And then with this project, it's so easy to pick it up, git clone, npm install, npm start, and just start running that he came back and he's been active ever since. And I guess for me personally, I remember trying to work on Chrome DevTools and Firefox DevTools as a contributor on the other side and just wanting to get involved and knowing how much that meant to me,
right?
And be able to pass that forward and see other people do what I couldn't do on the other side means a lot. Like, I remember my first contribution to Firefox DevTools as an employee took me 2 weeks. And it was when you added a conditional breakpoint that edited, the context menu would still say add conditional breakpoint, so edit. It's like, no, it should say edit because you already have something.
Right.
But it took me 2 weeks to get that right. 2 weeks to change a context menu. And then a year later, we had that feature in the new debugger and someone came in as their first contribution and fixed that exact same bug. Like, you'd have thought that like when we did it the first time, we're like, no, we should change this. But I missed it because like you missed this stuff.
Right.
And someone came in as their first contribution and said, hey, can I work on this? And then within an hour, it was done. And that blew my mind. Just the fact that someone can get in and do it.
Yeah, that's one of the really rewarding parts of working at Mozilla, right? Is that it's, for most of us, it's some of our time is baked in helping people, especially on this team, right? And it's super rewarding to hear. So like, for example, a couple of years ago, I did Google Summer of Code.
Oh, yeah.
And I got a email like 3 months after the project was over, saying, you know, that they're working with me on stuff at Mozilla, help them get a job at Microsoft, for example.
Wow.
And like that's like really, you really make a difference in people's lives. And we're super lucky that at Mozilla, we get the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I going into the job, I was really excited to work on the debugger. A year or two later, when I think about what's been most satisfying, it's those stories. It's been able to see someone who really should have been a senior engineer, but she wasn't being recognized by her manager, get that recognition and get that position. Or someone who wasn't sure if they wanted to be an engineer, have some early experiences here, and then go into engineering. There's this one core team member who is making the transition from being a language teacher. He lives in Poland. He knows like 5 or 7 languages. Amazing guy. Decided to get involved in the project as his first open source project for Hacktoberfest. And he's taught himself React and Redux and Flow and so many other things through the project. And is now looking for a job. And it's really nice to reflect on having that kind of impact. But the other reason why I think the community was so strong was because of how badly we needed them. You know how I said, like, don't build a debugger from scratch, like, just don't do it? We couldn't have done it without them. Like, from the beginning, every feature you look at, from like breakpoints in the gutter to conditional breakpoints to the breakpoint list, variables, the source tree, all of it was built by the community. I was there kind of like helping, adding some context, fixing some bugs, and then just like cheerleading them, because there's no way the two of us could have ever done it without. I think we've had over 250 people contribute. And last night I was talking to somebody who's like, that's a lot of hours. It's a lot of time, and that's a lot of passion.
And what's nice is so many of them stay with us. That's what's really cool.
Yeah.
Shifting gears a bit, one of the things that I've heard you say in our meetings is that debugging is hard. It's too hard. Why do you say that debugging is so difficult?
So I think it's really hard to, on a personal level, see people struggle. So in many ways, like, we have like fantastic jobs. Like, we can just, you know, show up to work every day and like hack on cool problems. It's like playing video games. But on the other hand, you see people on the team say, oh yeah, I'll have this done in a couple hours. This should be easy. And that becomes days. And they feel bad because they made a commitment. They said, you know, this will be done and I can help you with this other thing, and they can't do it.
Todd, Jason's talking about me right now. he's trying not to call that out.
Well, this has only happened once, you know, this one time.
Yeah, this one time. Yeah. This one time every day.
Or, I mean, even worse, like, you're just trying to learn how to program and you feel so stupid because React was easy to set up. You got that first, you know, UI with the H1, and then you can't do that thing for the life of you. And you, like, stay up all night and you're trying, and it just makes you miserable. And I guess that's even why I went to Recurse Center in the first place. It was like, why is it so much fun when it's fun and so bad when it's not? And how can we solve that? So, like, more importantly than like any one feature, like, oh, it's hard to do async or it's hard to whatever. It's just like that feeling.
Okay. You're trying to solve that feeling.
Yeah.
That's ambitious. I mean, I always just thought that was, you know, that's part of the thing. Like, no framework, no tool, no language does 100% of what you're ever going to need to, right? Like, yeah. I always felt like as soon as you hit that feeling, you've hit the boundary of that framework. Great. Now we're on to the 20% that is going to be super hard, but, you know, all of the unique parts of the app.
Yeah. And I think there's a legitimate argument that any language that's built or any framework that's built will, if it's successful, move the ball forward. And then we'll get to that frontier and we'll find the next thing. And I guess what I'm interested in is, like, what's that frontier and how do we help people visualize what's going on? Because
like a great big red banner of like, you've hit the frontier.
Oh, no.
Life is going to be bad now.
I think of it like, you know, you're flying a plane and everything's, you know, maybe it's a war analogy or something, and you've got to like maneuver quickly and see all your controls in your dashboard. Otherwise you crash and die. And we don't really have that dashboard right now. Apps are really complicated. Things are flying around in parallel. There's tons of memory and connectivity. Like, everything's connected to each other. You're calling functions and states being mutated. And yeah, like, we have no dashboard. Like, we're just flying blind.
So earlier today, you both got to do a confession, and I didn't judge. Jason, you like the Chrome debugger. Todd, you like Chrome. I have a confession. For the longest time, even though I'd been doing front-end development a long time, up until the last few months, I was a serial console.logger.
If I'd known that, you never would have gotten the job.
Damn it. but I think that you never really learn how to use a debugger. Like, there's no class for it, right? It's one of those things that as a developer, you just have to figure out yourself. And Todd, I can tell you that when I do pair programming,
I'm feeling some strong feels of disagreement on where this is going.
Doing some pair programming with Jason and using the debugger with him, it's not quite Gordon Ramsay. It's not quite Bobby Knight. But I can see the struggle in Jason's eyes when he's watching me try and fiddle around with the debugger, and it's like boom, 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 and I have like console.logs coming out. Jason, where do you, how do you value the console.logger? How do we win those people? Or do we need, are we fighting console.log, or like, how do we fit together with that sort of alternate debugger per se?
We definitely want to destroy console.log. No, two things. The facetious comment is the question I get a lot is why Firefox over Chrome? And as I said, I think Chrome's really good, and I think that we offer things that are really exciting, and I hope people use the Firefox debugger when they want to debug. But the real question is, why the debugger over the console? And the console just gets 10x, 100x, maybe 20x more usage. Monthly users, it's going to be more flat because people are going to come to the debugger for some things, but most of the time people reach for the console as opposed to the debugger. And I see that as a critical flaw, right? Like, on one hand, we've let you down if you can't reliably set a breakpoint, or you can't reliably see the variables, et cetera. Like, we should make those things better. But then I think there are legitimate reasons why people reach for the console, because let's say you're tracking a very complicated flow. You want to know, like, when I click this button, why it doesn't delete that email? You know, and there's a lot that has to happen in the software for you to go from like button to email. And logging can be a really useful technique for seeing all that. So what we want to do is say, how do we take those experiences that the consoles are really good at and then bring it to the debugger, make the debugger even better for logging, for visualizing flows, so you can track changes over time. And maybe we have more of a unified experience.
My angst I have about this is more just that, like, I use a lot of console logs. I also use the debugger a lot. Like, I feel like they're different tools for different purposes. Like, there's definitely a case where you can solve a problem better in the debugger versus just logging stuff out. But to me, there's a lot of cases where using console log is fine. Like, it can tell you a lot in kind of a way that I don't have to attach all my debuggers and then remove all my debuggers and then attach them again if I'm trying to debug something like kind of complex. Yeah. And like I don't think it's really productive to have the conversation of why the debugger is better and why the console is lesser. Like, they're different tools for different purposes in my
Absolutely. view. And as it stands today, there are definitely reasons to use the console, like exactly as you described. But I think in the future, we can do a lot of this in the debugger. So you mentioned adding and removing breakpoints, and like, you have your set of breakpoints that are perfect for the path of whatever you're debugging. Why can't we save that group so that the next time you want to come back and look at that flow from like button to email, you can't just like open up a pane and you're like, I want that path. And then we set those breakpoints for you. And maybe they're all starting off as log points. In the case of, like, it doesn't even have to pause. But as soon as you set that group, then every time you run through that path, we can show you those messages in the console. And we can even group them really nicely. Like, hey, this was the top with the button, and this is the bottom with the email being destroyed, and that's your group of messages.
Yeah, yeah. I get you.
And to be clear, Todd, I wasn't advocating for it needs to be one or the other.
Everybody's walking it back now.
No, I'm not walking it back. Debugger it all the way.
I'll use console statements still for having like an audit trail, having a set of text output that I can copy into my browser saying, this is a state of things when it's good. And then, I'm sorry, copy it in my text editor and then do something and then have the same audit trail for when things are bad. And you know, on the sideline, I can look at this log and say, oh, that's okay, that sort of thing. So I'm not saying that it needs to be one over the other. But what I will say is that, for someone like me who is simply doing console.log for the longest time, if you spend like 15 minutes in the debugger, I think that you'll see you'll see a lot more value than you thought, in that it was easier to use the debugger than you thought.
So we definitely want to improve the experience. I think the debugger turns off a lot of beginners because it has a ton of content that can be very intimidating, even knowing how the step buttons work. But I mentioned the groups earlier, and one reason why you can't just save a group of breakpoints is because you're going to change your code, and line 10 is no longer the start of like on click. So you have to remove line 10 and add another one on line 12 or something, which is why people use the console. Like, if I put a console log in beginning of the on click function, it's going to stay there because it's in my code. So we have to do stuff on the debugger side to be as significant as the console, which is harder. It's like when we save breakpoints today in the debugger, we also save the AST location. So we know that that breakpoint was inside of onClick, and it was the first line. So when you change your code and you come back, we move it for you so we can, you know, try to be as good as the console and preserve those breakpoints.
That's impressive.
It's fun. Yeah.
All right. Impressed.
So there's one other thing about how we, on the mission to destroy the console, which I completely mean facetiously, but I think is exciting. So we've been working on RR, which stands for record and replay, for the past 5 years. And first RR landed in C++, so you could record execution and then go back and see what happened at each point. And now we're doing the same thing for the browser, which means you can click that button and then run through to the end, the email is deleted or it's not deleted, and then say, hey, I want to go back to onClick. And you'll see exactly the values in that onClick function. And then you can go forward to the next function and see exactly the values. Or you say, you know what? I want to go to the end and see that email being deleted. And you can see those things. Then you can jump to the beginning and go up and down. And at that point, you don't need to add your console logs or your breakpoints. You just use the application as you'd otherwise use it. And then the debugger can show you anything at any point in time. More convergence.
I like that. So let me back up for a second. So I want to tell you a little story and then ask you a question based off of that. So my first browser that I used as far as software development was Firefox. But at the time, Firefox DevTools were, I don't even know if they really existed, because everybody just used Firebug, right? It was this extension you'd put in there and like it did everything. What happened to Firebug? Like where did it go? Did it become the dev, like, because the DevTools like really started taking off when Firebug went away. What is there, like, did you hire the Firebug people and yes, that became DevTools? Is that how that worked?
So my manager now maintained Firebug for 8 years. He's amazing. And he maintained the community, he maintained the product. And Firebug has features, well, had features when it was shut down, we can get to that, that we still don't have in Chrome DevTools or Firefox DevTools. So he's seen it all. And Firebug has done tremendous stuff for the community.
I definitely felt a little bit of a loss when I switched to Chrome DevTools from Firebug. It was like, it's not as good in, you know, a couple of interesting ways.
Yeah. So Firebug had the disadvantage of being an extension from the beginning. I mean, it had the advantage of not being tied to the Firefox build system and a bunch of other things that would make development harder. But by being an extension without the proper APIs, they had to resort to kind of hacky solutions. So it was never going to be the long-term solution as it was built in a performant way. But they did prove some amazing developer experience. Like, they invented the browser console and the inspector. Like, they were the first ones to it. And they had DOM breakpoints early on. They had, I think they had watch points, which is a feature that we still don't have in any debugger today, where you say, you know what? I want to break when that variable changes. Just watch that variable and stop when that changes, which is huge. Like, how many times you get undefined and you want to know, like, well, when did that thing become undefined? And it used to have that object. They could do that. So around 2012, we realized, you know, this Chrome DevTools thing is really doing well. They have like an army of people building DevTools into the browser with like the proper architecture. And there's no way Firebug as it stands can really keep up. Like for one, it was largely community with one full-time maintainer. And the other is it was an extension. So Mozilla spun up a separate DevTools team and started working on an in-browser API set that would work and gave a lot of those APIs to Firebug to make Firebug better. But the two projects kind of went in tandem until, I want to say, last year with Firefox Quantum, when they decided, you know, we've really got to make these add-ons really fast. And we can't maintain all these old extension APIs. So at that point, they had to make the hard decision and say, you know what, if you're using Firebug, come over to DevTools, and we'll try our best to like maintain parity.
That's I don't know. I work with the amazing debugger.html maintainer, Jason Laster, and my boss is the guy who maintained Firebug. That's good, but scary company.
And we work with davidwalsh.name. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
All right. All right. All right. All right. And enough self-congratulations. All right. So we're coming up on the end of our time. What else haven't we talked about that we need to talk about? We talked about like history, where it's going, the awesome community that's powering it. What have we missed?
I think that we should preview some of the awesome stuff that we, you know, have coming down the pipeline, Jason.
Sure.
What are some of the things right now that we're rolling out?
Do you want to talk about the new Breakpoints panel?
Sure. Yeah. So right now in the debugger, we have a Breakpoints panel that, you know, just lists off all of your breakpoints. But as of right now, each breakpoint only gives you the detail of what file it is and what line it's on. And that's not really helpful when you look at your breakpoint panel at a glance, because you don't know what's in that file on that line. So one of the big UI improvements we're making is, instead of simply showing the file name, we're going to show you the code on that line, along with syntax highlighting. So, you know, at a real quick glance, you're going to be able to look at that panel and, for the most part, know what exactly it is that you wanted to break on. That's one of the smaller features, but we have a couple of bigger features that you, Jason, have been working on, as well as a few community members. You mentioned time travel, where you could go back and sort of see what something was previously. What other awesome stuff do we have coming?
Yeah, so today we rolled out a feature to Nightly for the first time called Original Languages. And I talked about it briefly with the fact that we put Babel at like the heart of the debugger. But just using it for parsing was not enough to figure out, when you pause, what the original variables are. So you imagine, like, if you're using Babel or Webpack today and you pause, the variable list has like all these things that like make no sense. You want to find that one variable you imported, but instead you see like underscore Webpack dir 2 or underscore Webpack imported module foo something. Well, in January, we started working with Logan Smith, who's the tech lead of Babel, to solve that exact problem. And for one, I had no idea when we started how hard it was and how amazing Logan's been. Like, he knows every Babel transform and the semantics of language and how you go from ES5 to ES6. And we're rolling out this feature now that just preserves variables as they should be. So you see them in the variable list, you hover, you get a good pop-up, you go to the console, and you type, let's say you're importing the variable onClick, the function onClick. Now, if you go to the console and just type onClick in Chrome or the debugger today, you get undefined, because like that's not actually what Webpack is doing. It's putting in like underscore Webpack, whatever. Today, if you go to Nightly and you type in onClick, it works. We know that onClick maps to some expression, and we swap it out for you. And that experience is really nice. So I'm really excited to see how people enjoy that.
The pop-up feature has been getting a lot of work from community members too. And for those who don't know, you know, if you're paused and you hover over something to get its value, we show a really nice preview pane. What are some of the things that we've been improving in that lately?
So the first version was just you hover on a variable and you get the value, like a equals 2, you hover on a, you see 2. Or member expression, you hover on foo, and it's this dot foo, so you get this dot foo, and whatever is there. But we've been kind of obsessive and just finding edge cases where it breaks and then fixing them. So if you have an assignment with like x equals object, so like curly a colon 2 curly, and you hover on a, we can go and get the value 2. Or if it's like a colon and then an array, we can like go get the array, and if you go into the array, we can take the first value. We're handling so many cases, and it's just by virtue of like, oh, that's broken, file a bug, give a couple of instructions like how to fix it, and then people come in and it's so much nicer as a result.
And then lastly, we implemented a directory root feature, which is actually really cool.
Oh yeah.
A lot of times within your source tree, you're always debugging in the same set, right? Like, so if you have like an images folder, you don't need to see that every time. If you have, you know, whatever utility folder, you don't need to see that. So what you can do is you can drill your source tree down to your JavaScript directory. And then from that point forward, all you see are the JavaScript, I should say the resources within that folder, as well as when you do a source search, you're only going to get results listed from those relative sources. So that's a really nice way that you can sort of really pinpoint down your debugging experience.
Yeah. That sounds great. I'm going to have to download Firefox and give it another try.
You don't even have Firefox, man.
I mean, I have it. It just doesn't run, and it yells at me that it's 7 versions out of date every time I turn it on. I'll take that back. So I was using container tabs when Firefox Quantum came out. Container tabs, like, if I could offer any advice, that is your killer feature. Go all in on container tabs. Like, that is something that is against Google's like own internal incentives to ever do, because they're all about tracking the crap out of you. And Firefox can do it, and it made the web so much better. In fact, the only reason I ended up giving it up for my daily browser was because too many Google properties don't work in Firefox. It's almost like they're not incentivized to like make that work, right? All right. Well, we've been going for about 55 minutes, so it's probably time to wrap it up. At the end of every show, we do a core takeaway of what we picked out of the show. My biggest takeaway, or I guess the little tidbit that I think was really cool, is I have always had a very fond place in my heart for Firebug. I learned a lot of my core lessons about web development using Firebug, and I'm very tickled that the people behind Firebug still live on at Firefox doing their thing. That's really cool. What about you, David?
My biggest takeaway is you know, sort of the reminder of how important contributors are to an open source project. It's sort of amazing that we have this really awesome debugger that's only ever had, you know, like a maximum of 2 core engineers maintaining it at a time. And all of these other awesome features came from the community. I mean, I'm sure almost every Mozilla project could say that same thing. But without contributors, we'd be nowhere. And it's really awesome to sign in the morning and say, oh, half my day is going to be evaluating pull requests that I didn't do or that we didn't do, but someone out there was super excited about what we were doing and wanted to chip in. It's something that I've known, but it's always awesome to get that reminder. How about you, Jason? What do you take away from today?
That you are a console user. No.
My confession gets pointed out, but I ignore all of yours.
Yeah, I confess that I love Chrome, and one of the jokes, for me at least, is as we've been working on this product, I'd go back and forth between, oh yeah, I'm still a Chrome user. Oh no, I really like this product that we're building. Okay, I'm back to Firefox. No, it's not doing this thing. I'm back to Chrome. And I think I'm now like 3 months running on Firefox and really enjoying it. So that's good. I think I'll echo what you were saying, which is just how impactful Wellington and Bomsey joining in the early days has been. The fact that they've had such an impact mentoring and growing the team. We now have, I think, 7 or 8 people on the team who've helped. And how much fun it is to wake up and just be like, you know what? I get to work with these guys every day. Like, that's going to be, it's going to be really great.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I think we had a good show today. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, for watching us live and later. We'll be back next week with a new topic that has yet to be determined. Thanks so much for coming. I'm Todd Gardner.
I'm David Walsh.
See you next time.
The Script and Style Show is recorded and produced by David Walsh and Todd Gardner. We'll see you next time on Script and Style.